Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set for the clock.
It's Rep Game with RP3, Raymond Parks III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world. On Rep Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Good morning, Acadiana. This is Raymond Parks III, host of Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game, your home for LSU Tigers. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios here in Upper Lafayette. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. And it's time for Happy National Signing Day. If the early signing day wasn't enough for you and you need a little bit more in your life, well, here it is. Some big decisions are going to be made today for the bigger programs. The Louisiana Raging Cajuns are going to have a couple of guys to fill out their class because they had a good number of those guys signed during the early signing period back in December. LSU has even less spots available. They have six openings by most experts. They're expecting probably four of those spots to be filled today. Obviously, all eyes will be focused in on Amite High School later this afternoon. That's when Ish will be making his decision, and his teammate Lee will also be making their decision. Both of them have standing offers from LSU. I'd expect the wide receiver / DB to commit to LSU. Ish seems like he's leaning towards Alabama, but don't be surprised if they're able to get him to stay home and play for LSU. The weird thing about the LSU recruiting for National Signing Day, for whatever reason, they struggle and have traditionally getting kids from Amite High to play for them. It's this weird dynamic where all these other programs, and particularly Alabama, since Nick Saban arrived in Tuscaloosa, they just come in there and poach them. And part of that's because LSU did a poor job of recruiting the area. And another part of it is that maybe they don't want to stay for the state school. I'm not for sure what it is. But if LSU can get either one of those two guys, Lee or Ish, today, it would be the first player from a meet to sign with them since 2002. One of the best football programs in the state. And it would be the first time they signed one of those kids since 2002. It's 2019 right now. So that would be a huge deal for LSU to cap off this already terrific signing class. Today's show, though, is jam-packed. We will keep you updated for National Signing Day. We'll let you know what happens with the Raging Cajuns, with their commitments. We'll let you know about LSU, obviously. And then we'll also touch base with you and give you updates about any of our local kids right here from Acadiana that are making their choices on where they're going to go for college. We'll provide that information to you throughout today's show. But we have more than just National Signing Day. At 10:32, we'll have our friend Sheldon Mickles from the Baton Rouge Advocate. He's going to help us preview the LSU men's basketball game tonight tonight on the road at Mississippi State. You can listen to it live here pregame on 103.7 The Game at 7:30, tip at 8 o'clock. At 10:02, we're going to be bringing on the only player in Division I history, in NCAA history, that has not one, but two quadruple doubles. Two. Two. There's only been one man that's ever had a quadruple-double in Division I history. There's been three other women players have done it. No one's done it twice. We're going to bring on Shekyla from Grambling State University. She's a senior point guard for the Tigers. She's going to join us at 10:02 to talk about how she's able to record, be the first player in NCAA history in either men or women's basketball to have two quadruple doubles. So Shekyla Hill will join us at 10:02. And then sharing his own National Signing Day experience, a unique experience, is one of the state's best high school players in the history of Louisiana, a former star at LSU, and a gentleman who won a World Series ring with the Florida Marlins and also played in the NFL. Josh Booty will join us, the former Evangel High star, about his interesting National Signing Day experience because he did commit to the LSU Tigers way back in 1994, only to be drafted as the number 5 overall pick that summer in the Major League Baseball and decided to go play baseball for 4 to 5 years and then decided to come back and play. So we'll talk to Josh Booty about his experience, what kind of wisdom he passed down to his younger brother, John David Booty, who also was a heralded quarterback. He ended up going to USC. So we'll have Josh Booty on the program at 9:32. But we'll start off this National Signing Day edition of the Rap Game with RP3 with the Pels, the Pels, the Pels. So all reports are now that the Lakers have opted to pull out of the trade talks with the New Orleans Pelicans after the New Orleans Pelicans were not impressed with their offer of three young players under the age of 25. And then Rajon Rondo, Lance, I blow in your ear, Stevenson, and Michael Beasley, and then two first-round picks. Now, a lot of reports are that the Pels countered that they want like four first-round picks or two firsts and two seconds, or three firsts and 3 seconds, and a couple young players, and some expiring contracts. So the Pels are going to play hardball. That means more than likely they're not going to deal Anthony Davis by tomorrow's trade deadline, unless some other team comes in there and makes a great offer. All the reports are that they're waiting. There's a couple of different scenarios. They're waiting to the summer to see if Boston is going to wow them. Apparently Jason Tatum would be part of that trade. If I'm the Celtics, do I trade Jason Tatum? I personally wouldn't. I think that kid's going to be a perennial all-star for a decade. Everything that we saw last year. And Jason Tatum, I don't know. As much as I love AD and he's a top 5 player, you have that great core that nearly got to the NBA Finals last year. What happens this year if the Celtics go to the NBA Finals? Are you going to break that up to bring in Anthony Davis? I don't know. Everyone seems to think that's a done deal. I'm not so sold on that. I'm not sold that Anthony Davis wants to play for Boston. And, do you trade away foundation pieces for a guy that you may only rent for a year, especially if Boston, say, goes to the finals this year and maybe wins the finals? Do you give all that up for a rental player? I don't know. I think it's more likely that you could have a situation where the Pels, who are going to be in the lottery, but let's say the Pels look around and they see someone who's won the lottery. Maybe it's the Knicks. Maybe it's someone else. And the Pels are like, hey, we'll trade you Anthony Davis for your number 1 overall pick. And that way the Pels can rebuild around Drew Holiday with the number 1 overall pick, and then what would theirs be like, maybe 6 or 7. So 2 top 10 picks and Drew Holiday? Okay. That's probably more than likely what's going to happen. They're either going to unload them onto another team. Maybe the Knicks get involved here. I'm not for sure, but I think the nail in the coffin, so to speak, of any type of convincing that the Los Angeles Lakers front office had of convincing the Pels that they should take their offer, I'm pretty sure that died late last night when the players that they're trying to pawn off on the Pels were part of a 136-94 loss to the Indiana Pacers, who the Pels nearly beat with guys that are playing in the G League just the night before. Am I right here, Cody? It was just literally the night before or two nights before that the Pels went toe-to-toe with the Pacers, nearly beat the Pacers with Drew Holiday and the Fighting Holidays, just whatever. We'll name the rest of the team that way. And the Lakers with LeBron and all these guys, Kuzman and everything like that, they got curb stomped by the Pacers. So if you're the Pels front office, and look, I'm not the biggest fan of Dell Demps. I think he's doing an awful job, an atrocious job as a general manager of an NBA franchise. But, yeah, I'm gonna let the Lakers know. I'm going to let Magic Johnson then know. Nah, bro, we good. These young players that you're trying to pawn off on us aren't even as good as the guys that we have on the G League and guys that we got off the trash heap to surround Drew Holiday with.
Largest loss in LeBron's career.
I mean, I get if you're Magic Johnson and you're trying to get Anthony Davis, but, whew, you know, I just... And then the Pacers fans. Yeah, look, if you ever, I've spent time in the Midwest. I lived in the Midwest for about nearly 6 years. Spent time in Indiana. They take their basketball very seriously, Cody. And they did a terrific job last night trolling the Lakers. Because when Kuzman and Ingram were at the free throw lines, they started chanting, LeBron wants to trade you. LeBron wants to trade you. They started chanting like all these people inside where
that's
the Pacers play.
That's a good move, though. I like that from the fans.
LeBron wants to trade you. LeBron wants to trade. Like, oh, man. Can you imagine now that they're not going to get Anthony Davis? How's the tail end of that season going to go on with the Lakers when they tried to trade everyone as part of that package deal for Anthony Davis? It was Kuzma. It was Brandon Ingram. It was Lonzo, I can't shoot from 10 feet away from the basketball. It was Rajon Rondo. It was Michael Beasley. It was Lance Stephenson. So it was the young guy that LeBron said he wanted to be patient with, and it was the veteran guys that he signed off bringing on to help him bring veteran savviness and grit to the team. All those guys and picks. Like there's part of the deal I'm sure we don't not even aware of. Magic Johnson's like, I can give you free lifetime movie passes at the movie theaters I own.
Right.
That's part of the deal, too. Didn't matter. I'll send you my complete 1990s talk show on VHS.
Magic Johnson had a talk show?
He did.
How about that?
Yeah, it did not last long.
No, I imagine not.
It was awful.
Steve Wilkes, he is not, or Wilkos. Or
well, it came in, it was like post-Arsenio, so it was part of Arsenio Hall, so Magic thought, oh, I'll get my show. No, man.
Nah, the dog pound stays loyal.
No, Magic, we love you. We love you. You're not a host. What's going to happen with the Pels? That's the big question mark. What's going to happen with the Pels now? We don't know. I'm going to be curious to find out what's going to happen. Right now, everything's kind of quiet. It looks like they're just going to keep Anthony Davis. Now, whether or not they shut him down, because reports are already coming out that he's saying that he wants to play, and they're kind of being wishy-washy about it. They haven't come out and say, well, no, you're not going to play. We're going to shut you down. So that'll be something that'll have to be addressed moving forward. But surprising, it appears that the Pels are going to hold on to Davis and wait to see if they can get something better for him. But I don't know. I mean, I'm not for sure if they can get something better for him. I just don't know. I just don't know if they can get something better for him, because the market is the way it is. And when the Knicks make the decision to trade Porzingis to the Mavs, I was like, well, and apparently some reports have come out that the Knicks offered Porzingis as part of a deal to the Pels for Anthony Davis, and the Pels passed.
I can see that. You may have no idea on what happened here between the Pels and Lakers, but we do have a call on the Arco Equipment Hotline. Maybe a couple of guys here that can shed some light on this Anthony Davis situation. Friends of the program.
Oh, 103.7 The Game rap game with RP3 in the field correspondence.
Exactly.
Oh, let's bring them on. Let's bring them on. Let's bring on the New Orleans Pelicans mascots, Pierre the Pelican and the King Cake Baby. Thank you for joining us, guys. I know it's been a tumultuous few weeks with the Anthony Davis drama, so won't you give us the inside intel here? Why? What happened? Why didn't Dale Demps and the rest of the Pelicans front office decide to trade Anthony Davis to the Los Angeles Lakers?
Now what you going down there on right now, about that right now, down now, you hear, huh?
I see. That's an interesting point, something we haven't really talked about. LaVar Ball is being a huge factor in this. Yes, I understand. Probably, you know, from what you're hearing from your inside sources there, King Cake Baby and Pierre the Pelican, is that the deal probably wouldn't have went through, but LaVar Ball has sabotaged it, and Mickey Loomis, who's also the general manager and leader of the front office of the New Orleans Saints, decided they did not want that headache of dealing with the Baller brand, Mr. Baller brand himself. Interesting. That's not been reported on all that much. Well, what else? Do you think something can be salvaged? Do you think AD is going to be traded to the Lakers or to the Knicks or maybe to the Milwaukee Bucks or to the Clippers?
Who that don't going to be next that you going to don't think take over that damn pole?
Interesting. So you're saying Pierre the Pelican and King Cake Baby, mascots of the New Orleans Pelicans, NBA franchise in New Orleans, that, in fact, Anthony Davis will not be traded before the trade deadline on Thursday, and that the Pels are going to wait till after the lottery is decided and see if they can trade with someone that has the number one overall pick so they can try to get Zion Williamson. Ah, yes. Thank you, King Cake Baby. Well, thank you. I greatly appreciate it. Thank you, guys. Thank you for that intel. I know you're extremely busy right now, but we appreciate you taking some time. That right there, ladies and gentlemen, was the 103.7 The Game in the field correspondence.
You only get that kind of insight on Rap Game, just so you know.
That's right. It was a joint. It was the rare joint effort.
Yeah, the conference call.
The conference call with Pierre the Pelican and the King Cake Baby.
I like Pierre the Pelican.
Pierre the Pelican.
The Pelican.
Breaking it down. That just, you know, right there, if you want to know how ridiculous the whole Anthony Davis situation is, you're
There's
welcome.
There's a baby and a pelican somewhere on a cell phone together. That's how ridiculous it is.
When we come back, we're going to dive into a little National Signing Day, give you any updates that are out there about LSU Cajuns and local Acadiana athletes right here on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game, your home for LSU Tigers. Go. Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, here on 103.7 Game, home of LSU Tigers. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios here in Upper Lafayette. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Today is National Signing Day, and even though the early signing period has taken a bit of shine off, so to speak, of what the this February day means to a ton of people, because it used to be traditionally just this day and that was the celebration, and the early signing period's kind of siphoned off a little bit of that excitement, a little bit of that juice, so to speak. That said, it's still a big day because you still have big time prospects that are out there figuring out where they're going to be playing at. And, you know, we have a few updates there that we already know that LSU picked up the number 5 junior college defensive end in the nation. That was a few days ago. The kid out of Salt Lake City, Funya. I'm pretty sure I butchered that name, Cody Schutz. And let's see. They also They have some other guys that they're targeting. LSU is targeting, you know, Ishmael Softner. We talked about Devontae Lee, his teammate. They'll be making their decision live at 12:45 today. Ish is the number 5 D tackle in the nation. Lee is the number 8 athlete in the nation. So you have that. And you have other guys that they were targets. You know, Christian Williams out of Daphne, Alabama. The LSU was really looking at him, number 20 cornerback in the nation. He's not coming to LSU. It looks like he's made his decision to go to Miami, to go to the U. Garmin Randolph, another guy that we talked about earlier this week from Jarrett Rozier, tight end out of Georgia, big 6'6", 235-pound kid, three-star guy. He's not coming to LSU. He's opted to go elsewhere. So we'll keep you posted. You know, there's some question marks. What Ray Parker's going to do? You know, he is a verbal commitment for the Tigers, but is he going to wrap things up? That's the big O tackle, 6'5", 250, possibly a tight end as well. So there's some question marks there. Cody, are you seeing any updates involving the Raging Cajuns or anyone throughout Acadiana as of right now?
I am not anything that we didn't already know from the early signing day. I know the Cajuns were kind of rehashing, if you will, those guys earlier in the morning, but I'm still searching around. I do not see anything as of note currently, though. We do know a lot of times for big LSU recruits, specifically, we know a lot of those times won't happen until we're off the air, but as far as any of the UL recruits or kids from Acadiana going to other schools, I'm still in search of anything breaking on that.
You're what we like to call efforting?
Sort of, yes, kind of.
Efforting.
It's hard to effort when all you can do is click the refresh button. You know what I mean? It's a bit difficult.
Well, and here's some guys that they were targeting. Five-star wide receiver George Pickens, for one, Alabama native. LSU was trying to be in the hunt for him. It was going to be a long shot by most reports. It ended up being so. Kirby Smart and his staff at the University of Georgia flipped him from Auburn to Georgia. He signed. Georgia now has 5 of 247 Sports' top 26 recruits in the nation. So Georgia's putting together one heck of a class already. I'm trying to see here if we got any other. It's usually kind of slow at this time in the morning, like you said. No, we do have, and I think we already expected this, was West Monroe's Andrew Gleason signing with the Raging Cajuns. Yeah, they had their ceremony. He had his ceremony put on the hat this morning. Our friend Adam Hunsucker tweeted out a little bit of a video of that. As well. So look, it's going to be a busy day. Zach Clement, that's right here in our backyard. He signed out of Lafayette. He signed with committed to Northwestern State. So we'll keep you posted as it progresses. It's going to be a kind of a crazy day. As we all know, it's National Signing Day. So we will keep you posted on who goes where. And like we said, yeah, Christian Williams. He was a target of LSU's, the four-star defensive back out of Alabama. Manny Diaz, the new head coach at Miami, flipped him from the Crimson Tide to the Hurricanes. So that happened earlier this morning. So impressive, impressive. So it's off and running, National Signing Day. When we come back, we're going to talk to someone who's lived it, breathed it, the one and only Josh Booty, joins the Rap Game with RP3 after this break right here on 103.7 The Game, home of the LSU Tigers.
LSU, second down from the 17. Back to that play. Boy, it's the big fella on a hand. Touchdown, Royal!
Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsa III, here on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. And that clip you heard was from our next guest from his playing days at LSU. He was a parade All-American at Evangel up in Shreveport, where he threw for a record, then national record, 11,700 yards and 126 touchdowns. He led his team to the 1A state championship. He was a multiple offensive player of the year, beating out the likes of fellow senior at that time, Peyton Manning, back in 1994. He signed with Curley Hallman and the LSU Tigers that year, but after being drafted in the top 10 as the number 5 overall pick by the Florida Marlins, where he would end up going, playing professional baseball, winning a World Series championship before coming back to play quarterback for two seasons at LSU and heading off to the NFL. It is our privilege to welcome on the one and only Josh Booty to the program. Josh, how are you this morning, brother?
I am doing awesome, brother. I'm in Houston at a oil and gas conference, but when you said the name Curley Hallman, I was like, wow, I hadn't heard that name in a long time, brother. That's a good name right there. But he was awesome. He was an awesome guy. But you know what? Later on, LSU got him their man, Nick Saban. He turned the thing around, and they're still benefiting from some of the stuff he did.
Yes, that they are, Josh, that they are. Well, look, brother, I want to – because you have an interesting experience with National Signing Day, because you were a two-sport star, and you knew going in. So I want to kind of have you kind of go through memory lane, take a stroll down memory lane, so to speak. So when you're going through the process, and you were a multiple All-State baseball player, you batted over 420 your senior season there at the shortstop position for Evangel.
Yep.
You're going through this process. You comes February. It's National Signing Day. Walk me through before we get to there. Who was coming after you? I mean, you were the National Player of the Year. So was it every program in the country had offered you by that chance, by that time?
Yeah, but my junior year, we broke a lot of the national passing records and state records, and we started getting recognition. And of course, we were playing in a shotgun, empty wide, five wide, four wide sets. And at that time, no one was doing it. And we garnered a lot of national attention just because we were throwing the football way better than any of the other high schools in the country. And so scouts and coaches started coming to the game, man, coming to the practice, spring ball. After my junior year, I remember Bill Walsh, Bill McCartney, Mac Brown, all those guys were in there. Dennis Erickson, I developed really good relationships with a lot of those guys. Norm Chow at BYU, schools that threw the football. And, I took all my visits that year, my senior year, during my, fall of senior year, and I went to Colorado, I went to Miami, I went to Texas, I went to Stanford, I went to LSU. Those were my top five. And a lot of the reasons those were my top five was because their baseball programs were so good, other than Colorado, who didn't have a baseball program. And McCartney said, I'll get you drafted seventh overall by the Rockies, and you can stay in the Colorado area and play football for me. So, I mean, there's a lot of little things that were kind of happening at the time. But I really loved LSU because of the baseball program and Skip Burton. And they had come off the national championship the year before. I was neighbors with Todd Walker and the Walker family. He was National Player of the Year. He was playing second base. I was a shortstop. And we grew up talking LSU baseball. And so I fell in love with Skip Burton and the baseball side just as well as I did Curley Hallman and the football side. I know on the football side, Jamie Howard was leaving. He was playing some baseball for the Braves. He had a shoulder injury. I thought had a great opportunity to come in there as a freshman and start at shortstop because Russ Johnson was a first-round draft pick the year before. And, and Jamie Howard was leaving. And of course, he's a Lafayette guy right where you're at. So I just felt like, it was a great opportunity for me. Their football was not near what their baseball was at the time, but I was going to do both, and I loved baseball. So I was trying to pick the place closest to home that had the best baseball program with an opportunity for me to start a quarterback right out of the gate.
We're on with Josh Booty. Now, Josh, when you were going through that process, did LSU pitch it to you that you could play both, that wasn't going to be an issue whatsoever?
No, not at that time they said no problem. I mean, there were some guys who tried it, and it seemed like they always ended up, having to do one or the other by their second year. But they were going to let me go for it, man. And my dream was, as a kid, was to always be the first one to play quarterback in the NFL and Major League Baseball at the same time. I grew up watching Deion and Bo, and I was with Deion this week in Atlanta talking to Kyler Murray about that. It's just impossible to do that at the Major League level and at the NFL level because there's so much that comes with being an NFL quarterback. But in college, you could pull it off. Jameis Winston did it. just a few years ago at Florida State, where he won a Heisman and a national championship and played baseball. And so it's possible at the college level, because you can kind of go across the street and play baseball in a few games, maybe playing half the games, and you go to spring ball and you catch the game at night. But, you know, when you're talking about at the next level, it's just impossible for a quarterback to think he can leave the building and spend half a year somewhere else or in another city. You know, it's darn near impossible. No one's ever done it.
Josh, when you're going through that process, I mean, the name that really sprung to mind during that time in 1994, well, in the 1993, your senior season, mm-hmm. is that the player that you were beating out all these All-American honors and all these National Player of the Year awards, including the USA Today Offensive Player of the Year,
mm-hmm.
was Peyton Manning down in Isidore Newman, another Louisiana kid. It was a weird thing where the two best quarterback recruits and most heralded quarterbacks in the country were both playing in Louisiana, one down at the southern tip of the state and the other one at the northern part. What did you, during all that process and all that recognition and all those awards and everything, did you get to know Peyton at all? Did you develop a friendship with him?
Yeah, I did. My dad and Archie go way back and have had many, many, many conversations. I guess Evangel and Newman tried to schedule games and stuff during those years. It never really worked out, but we wanted to play them really bad. And, of course, we knew who Archie was and the Manning family. Cooper was a great player before those guys. So we always wanted to play them, really, more than anything. It's just compete at a high level. And Manning was doing his deal and throwing for a bunch of yards. But, we were throwing for more, and I think that's why we garnered all the national attention. And I was a two sports star, so I was getting it kind of double, you know. I don't think Peyton liked that I beat him out for Player of the Year. He told me a couple of times that he still holds a grudge on that deal, which is kind of funny because he's a Hall of Famer. But he's like Tom Brady. He holds everything in, man. And that's what makes him tick. But what an unbelievable player he was. Of course, played against him in the NFL. And he was one of the reasons I wanted to come back to LSU once I did the baseball thing, because I saw him have such success at Tennessee. But Tennessee in those years were so good. He had so many great wideouts and running backs, and offensive line was just amazing. And when I went back to LSU, we weren't at that level yet, and we had to try to build it. And that was the toughest part for me, was when I did come back to play football, we weren't at a high, high level. We weren't a top 10 team. When Peyton was at Tennessee, they were definitely a top 10 team.
We're talking to Josh Booty, one of the most prolific quarterbacks ever to come out of the state of Louisiana. Josh, you make the decision, you sign on the dotted line. Back then, it definitely would have been a fax machine back in those days. where you sign on the dotted line to commit to play both football and baseball at LSU.
Yeah.
But you had to know that Major League Baseball teams were looking at you because of how good of a hitter you were and how good of a fielder you were. But did you anticipate being a top 10 draft pick? I mean, did you think it was going to happen? And when it was it automatic for you to say, okay, well, I'm going to go try to get to the big show? I mean, was it just like that?
Well, it's a great question. I had a great advisor, Jeff Morad, out of Newport Beach, California, and I still reside out there now because of him and Lee Steinberg. They represented me, and they did football and baseball and had both sides of their agency out there. And so it was a good fit for me at the time. They were the first real Star Wars agent, and you know, the movie Jerry Maguire was about their agency. But Morad was a big baseball guy and had Will Clark and a lot of players that I really, really thought a lot of at the time. And so I went with him as an agent, and he positioned me really to go to Miami and play to get picked by the Marlins at number five, because they were a new franchise. Izinga had real deep pockets, and he knew there was no players ahead of me in the organization, so I could fast track myself to the big leagues. And so there was no third baseman. So, you know, you're only as lucky as you know, your situation, to be honest with you, when you get drafted. I had no third basemans really ahead of me that were prospects, because they had just built a little farm system that they had to when they were the new franchise. So I think they were 2 years kind of into the farm system. So they weren't stockpiled like some of the other, major league organizations and minor league organizations. So I felt like, listen, let's go try to position myself with Miami. I think I could have been the first pick or second pick, to be honest, but they weren't going to pay. It was like Milwaukee and the A's. They weren't going to pay me the money that I wanted to take me away from LSU. So that was the position. I was like, I want to go number five, slot me to Miami. They're going to pay me more money than anybody's ever got in the draft, and I'm going to be in a situation where I'll get to the big leagues fast if I play okay. And, you know, there's no one ahead of me. And that was really the goal. And that would be what took me away from going to LSU to play both. If I didn't get that, I was going to go to LSU and do both. And it happened. I landed in the fifth spot. Marlins drafted me. So, you know, I went and played 4 years of baseball. There wasn't really anybody ahead of me. I got fast-tracked a little bit, struggled a little bit in the minor leagues. It's hard to go from high school to A-ball or hit with a wood bat back then. You know, you just didn't have many at-bats in high school to get yourself prepared. But defensively, I was good enough to make it to the big leagues early and, you know, in my career. And was up and down a few times, but got to experience some unbelievable stuff. It was a part of the 97 World Championship team. So kind of a crazy few years.
Now, you make the decision where the baseball career kind of stalls on you, Josh, and you make the decision, hey, I want to go back and I want to play football again. You never lost that desire to play football. I know you've talked about that before over the years. So why did you want to go back to LSU? By that time, it was a different coach. It was Jerry DiNardo when you decided to go back. Why not open up the recruiting again? Why not see, hey, maybe stay in Florida, try to catch on? At that time, you could have went to maybe go play for Steve Spurrier at Florida or maybe Bobby Bowden at Florida State. Why did you decide, okay, baseball's not going to work out, I'm going to go back to LSU?
Yeah, you sound just like my dad, man. That's exactly what he said. he said, why would you go to LSU and play an offense where they're 3 yards in a cloud of dust, double tight, two back, one receiver sets? Why would you do that? And in 99, DiNardo had that thing going on. And that's a question that I still ask myself today, but the answer is Abram was there, my younger brother, and had a freshman All-SEC year the year before. And I had told him, and in 97 I tried to get out of my contract and go back to school, and it didn't happen. Wayne Huizenga would not let me out of my no football clause. But Abram, I told him if he would go to LSU, then I would, as soon as my contract was over, I'd meet him there, and we'd play for LSU together. So he committed to LSU when he had, you know, every offer in the book too, Florida State, you know, Oklahoma. Those were all the teams, Miami, that were doing well at the time. So as soon as I get there, I'll come and try to play quarterback, be your quarterback. And so that was the deal. Abram was there, so I had a brother there on the team. And I wanted to see if I could turn the whole thing around, which sounds nuts, because if I had to do it all over again, I'd go to a place that had a ton of talent around me, like in Oklahoma, now, or like Ohio State, or like Georgia, Bama, where you got loaded guns, and you know you got a loaded gun with all the talent. LSU's like that now, but they weren't back then. So, anyways, it was just a family deal, man. I wanted to go down there and see if we could pull something off. And the first year was super tough because it wasn't my style. I don't think I was in the shotgun all year. And I grew up in the 9-yard shotgun, which is, famous at Evangel.
So you make the decision. So you just went right back to LSU. Now walk me through it. As someone, because you committed in 1994 and signed your paperwork, your national letter of intent, faxed it all over, did you have to go through all that again in 1999, Josh, or did you simply say, hey, I already have this paperwork, I don't have to go through this again? Tell us, kind of give us the details about that. How does that work?
What happened is Huizenga sold the team to John Henry, who now owns the Boston Red Sox. And my agent, Morad, did a deal with Dave Dombrowski, who is our GM, who actually is the GM of the Red Sox now as well, and a famous general manager in baseball, and was with the Marlins, Tigers for a long time, and now with the Red Sox. Well, he did a deal where I could get out of my contract when Henry bought the team from Huizenga. And so I had a year left off my contract, a year left where I couldn't play football. And then when Henry bought the team, Morad said, we can go in and negotiate now for you out, because Huizenga was the guy that put up the money for me, not Henry. And Henry goes, hey, you pay your 1 year back of salary, what you'd be making, and you can go back and play football all you want, big guy. So I just went down to Baton Rouge and enrolled. I paid for my college. No one knows that. Went enrolled. I didn't even talk to DiNardo. And I just went in and enrolled, and I remember going up to the football office and saying, DiNardo, Jerry, I want to come out for the football team. And, you know, I didn't even get a scholarship. I wasn't there on scholarship. I went in and said, I'm playing. And I went down there, and I just pretty much walked on, I guess. I mean, they gave me my number, and I went out there. I mean, I was on the team. And, you know, of course, he wanted me there, but I think, you know, now I look back on it, maybe he didn't want me there.
Well, Josh,
I
mean,
yeah, I mean, and you know, obviously they make the coaching change from Jerry DiNardo to Nick Saban, and in 2000. But you became the first LSU quarterback to earn first team All SEC honors since Tommy Hodson there, and then and it's so weird to look back that 2000 team. You had yourself on it. You had Craig Nall on the roster, and you had Rohan Davey. All three of you guys went on to play in the NFL.
Yeah, and Matt Mock was on that roster too, who won the national championship. I mean, we had four guys that actually, you know, went on and wore an NFL uniform. And you know, it was a heated competition when I first got there because those guys had been there for several years, Davey and Nall. And like I said, I just kind of walked into the situation. And Herb Tyler had just gotten done with his last season. No one knew who the quarterback was, but, you know, the state of Louisiana really wanted to. Felt like they really wanted me there. And, of course, there was tons of press coverage and different things at that time where, you know, the first day I was there, DiNardo said, well, let's hold a press conference. You're back. And I'm like, let's do it. And, I mean, the room was packed. It was unbelievable. And I felt really good about being there. But I still had to go beat out the guys that were there. And they'd been in the system 2 years. But that system was so elementary. It was like a high school system. And it was just running the football. And remember, we were in two-minute drill in practice the first week or two I was there in the spring, and we had one wide receiver set in two-minute drill, and I looked over there, and he hired Bob McConnell to run the offense, who had never been a coordinator, and I'm like, Bob, how in the hell are we in one wide receiver set in two-minute drill? We were just so behind the times, and there was little things that were just kind of off. I mean, we were throwing a big, like, large girth football when you can't throw a large girth football. It's like a rugby ball. You know, you got to throw a passer's football to really do well and have a passing game. But they weren't thinking passing. It was just a different era, you know, back then. But it was very tough to go in there and try to beat out Rohan and Craig because they were there and they were big, you know, strong athletes and had been working, you know, working out in the weight room and throwing every day with the guys, and it developed a little bit of a rapport with all the teams. So that was the toughest part, was to really just insert myself in the middle of that.
Josh, we'll wrap it up with this, man. I mean, how different has National Signing Day become? I mean, you took part of it in 94, and then obviously you saw your brother, John David. He went through a similar thing in 2003 when he ended up going to USC. And it's just grown and grown and grown. From your perspective as a guy who lived it and went through it and saw your brother do it as well, how big has it become? How much of a circus has it become? And did you ever think it would become this back when you signed your first national letter of intent back in 94?
Yeah, you know, it's totally changed because you get recruited earlier, you get noticed earlier, you get promoted earlier. I mean, this is a business partner today. I mean, it's like these kids, some of them don't have good, you know, promoters within the school. And we have a high school in San Antonio now that my dad's running, and we're trying to figure out ways to promote these kids because everybody's promoting with social media and YouTube and Huddle and the different things. I mean, you've got to get these players out there because if you don't do it, who's going to do it, you know? And they have to do it themselves at home, you know? And so you got to give them content. You got to give them all the stuff that they need to get to the next level. And there's a lot of guys that fall through the cracks because, man, no one really helps them. And so, you know, I always like the high school coaches that have the relationships. If I was a dad, I'd send my kid to a high school, you know, that had a lot of relationships, that have had kids recruited or know that the coaching staff knows these coaches, because you don't want to get lost in the cracks. And some of these people can't, you know, they can't get to the place that they need to get to. And then so they've got to promote themselves, and it's sometimes very difficult to stack up against kids that have a little more resources to do that. So, know, if you're not a 4 or 5 star guy, you're a 2-star, 3-star type of guy. You need to be in a good situation where you can get noticed, because today's age, man, everybody's putting themselves out there, and that's the difference. It's the social media, the Huddle, and the YouTube stuff.
And, you know, from your perspective, though, Josh, I mean, obviously someone who grew up with, you know, coaches in his family, and obviously you all and your brothers played. Do you think mm-hmm. National Signing Day has become a good thing or a bad thing? Because I know people have an argument that goes both ways, and that it's become more of a kind of a show, and it's a little bit more of selfishness for the kids, while others say, well, look, these kids get an opportunity to put their school on the map, and they get to have a moment where they get to share this on television with their mom and their dad or their grandma and their grandpa. So weigh in on that. How do you feel about that? Do you think it's become a good thing, or is it a bad thing, or maybe a combination of both?
I think a combination of both. It's a good and bad thing that it's become a show, because it's a good thing that these kids get to experience that, and they're in front of the camera, and they get to learn how to handle certain situations. They think this is the bigger-than-life experience, and it is for most of these kids who come from nothing. So it's great for these families and kids to be in front of the camera, to make it a little bit of a big deal, you know, and to get some attention. But don't get caught up in the hype, because you ain't there yet. And so that's that, you know, so it could be bad, too, thinking that you're all hot stuff. I mean, you show up to campus and, you know, guess what? There's 70 other guys on the team that did the same thing, you know, and have been working out in the weight room hard. So you better be, your mentality better be to get better every day, or you're going to get lost in the shuffle no matter what. So if you can handle it and you can enjoy it and have fun with it, and have your family enjoy it, but don't get caught up in your own hype, man, because people will leave you in the dust if you don't watch it.
Josh, appreciate you coming on, brother, sharing your story. It's hard to believe, man. It's hard to believe 25 years ago.
Too long, man.
25 years ago, you signed your national letter of intent, brother. That's
unbelievable.
It is.
Don't tell anybody that.
Josh, I appreciate you coming on, brother, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Yeah, call anytime. Thanks, buddy. Bye-bye.
Josh Booty, Parade All-American, Offensive Player of the Year, one of the best damn high school players that's ever come out of the state of Louisiana. I knew he'd be able to bring good quality stuff. We ran long, but that's all right. He brought the goods. We'll wrap up. Well, we're wrapping up the first hour of this National Signing Day edition of the Rap Game with RP3. Second hour coming up after this break right here on 103.7 The Game, your home for LSU Tigers.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name for wouldn't
step like a locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it? Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world. On Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. LIVIN.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game, home of the LSU Tigers. And we're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios here in Upper Lafayette. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111. And that's where we're going to head out to right now as we welcome on our second guest of today's show. She's a senior guard for the Grambling State University Tigers women's basketball team. She's currently, right now, a 4-year starter who's averaging 19.2 points per game and 8 rebounds per game. Last year, in January of last year, she became the first player in Louisiana collegiate history and only the 4th women's player to ever record a quadruple-double. She did that against Alabama State. But over the weekend, she became the first player in NCAA history, whether it's men's or women's basketball, to record 2 quadruple doubles as she pulled in 21 points, 16 boards, 13 assists, and 10 steals in a 77-57 win over Arkansas. Pine Bluff, Grambling State returns to action this Saturday at Southern. Tip at 3 p.m. on Saturday. We welcome to the program Shakyla Hill. Shakyla, how are you
Hi.
This morning?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. So last year when you recorded your first quadruple double, you got a lot of pub, both regionally and nationally. You even had some of the NBA's biggest stars like Chris Paul and James Harden tweeting about your accomplishments. And then obviously LeBron James commented about that. I want to start with that. What was it like having some of the biggest stars in the NBA talking about what you did on the court in college?
That was probably the thing that got to me most, that they acknowledged my accomplishment. That kind of drove me actually this year to get another one, thinking about the LeBron shout out and all the other people that really acknowledged what I did.
Yeah, and you know, Chicago, you're having a terrific season. Like I said, averaging 19 points and 8 boards a game. You know, take me back to last weekend's game against Arkansas Pine Bluff in that 77-57 win. You needed one last steal, is that correct? And that occurred with 52 seconds left. So, what's going through your brain? Yeah. You must have already knew you already had the triple double, but you were only one steal away from the quadruple. Were you being aggressive on defense in that last minute to try to get that steal? Walk me through that.
Yes, this time, the first time it was kind of a surprise, but this time I knew and the crowd kind of knew. So once the crowd got a hold of it, they kept telling me, like, we need one steal, one steal. And so I tried to be super aggressive on defense, and then I ended up getting my fourth foul. So on the inside, I kind of, like, gave up, like, okay, maybe it's just not going to happen today. I can't be as aggressive. I have four fouls, and I don't want to foul out. And then at the end of the game, the girl just tried to make a cross-court or a full-court pass, like, right over my head, and I ended up getting the ball, and then everybody went crazy, and then I couldn't even move after that for a little second. I laid on the ground.
We're talking to Shakyla Hill. She's the senior point guard for the Grambling State University Tigers women's basketball team. Shakyla, did you ever imagine, you know, growing up, I know you're originally from Little Rock, Arkansas, and growing up, did you ever think that a quadruple-double was a possibility, or that it was even a thing that could be accomplished? I mean, because we always talk about double doubles and triple doubles. Did you even remotely think one day you'd have the opportunity to get not one but two quadruple doubles?
No, actually, I don't even think I knew it was a thing until I got one last year. And then even last year, I remember after the game, like, we were talking about it, like, as a team, and I was fairly excited, but it was like, I don't think we all knew how big of a deal it was until I think we left the game. And my phone had died after the game, and then when I, like, got back to my room and got my phone back, I had all these tweets, all these followers, all this everything, and I realized it really was a big deal. Like, it hadn't been done in, I think, 25 years. And so growing up, I never even knew it was a thing, so it's really crazy.
Yeah, you just mentioned that, Chicago, where it really hadn't happened in two decades, a quadruple-double to begin with. In the women's game, there was a rash of them there in about like a 5 or 6 year period where all of them happened. You had one last year, and now you've had one again. That's just a phenomenal accomplishment. Who has kind of reached out to you? Who's giving you some dap, so to speak, about getting the second one over the weekend?
More so, it's been ladies from women's basketball. Dawn Staley has reached out. She said something on Twitter. Kevin Garnett put me on his Instagram, but it's more so figures in women's basketball. So everybody knows I'm still waiting on LeBron again because he's like my favorite player. But most of the acknowledgement has come from women basketball stars.
Oh, wow. And what's that meant to you? Because I know you have aspirations of going on to the next level, playing professionally, possibly playing in the WNBA. What does it mean to you to have former greats on the hardwood in the women's game make sure to recognize you and congratulate you on your accomplishment?
Actually, that's really big to me because, for one, most people know HBCUs really don't get a lot of attention. So being that I'm a girl and I go to a HBCU, the fact that they're acknowledging what I did and putting it on a national stage is really big to me. And I'm glad that I'm getting the attention that I am getting.
And you also play for a university that's known nationally or possibly even internationally for its football program. When people talk right. about Grambling, they automatically think of football. How much pride do you take in the fact that you're putting the spotlight on women's basketball for your school?
I take a lot of pride in that because, like you said, when people think of Grambling, they think of the band, they think of Eddie Robinson, and most people automatically don't think, hey, women's basketball. And so because of this, it's become more of a, I guess, the word I want to use is a full sports school instead of people thinking like, hey, if you go to Grambling, you're just going to go see the football games. It's brought more people out to our games. It's brought more alumni, more school support. And so I'm really glad that I was the one that could lead that the support for the women's basketball team.
Chicago, tell me a little bit about, I know reading a story that's appeared on The Undefeated for an interview that you did with them, talking about that you kind of tailor your game after Russell Westbrook. Tell me a little bit about a little bit more about that.
Yes, I feel like the reason that I'm able to get quadruple doubles is because just like Russell Westbrook, we have a motor that I feel like God has placed in us that he hasn't really placed in other people. The motor that I have and the way that I compete, I feel like I never want anybody to outwork me. And I feel like Russell Westbrook is the same way. I think yesterday, I think he had 15 points, 16 assists, and like 15 rebounds. Like, he does whatever needs to be done for his team to win, regardless of if that's scoring, rebounding, assisting, or steals. And so I feel like we play a lot in many different aspects, especially our competitive level.
For you, Chicago, I know it's important to you. You know, Grambling right now is 9-12 overall in the season, but you guys are 6-3 in the SWAC, and you're going, you know, tail end here that the second half of conference play. You know, you're right in the midst of it, and you want to finish the season strong. I know it's great to have the spotlight placed on yourself, but how important is it for you to help your team win and make a run in the conference tournament and get to the big dance?
Actually, that's my biggest goal. Coming from last year, we made it to the tournament, and then the year before, we went to the WNIT, and we ended up beating Ole Miss. So our biggest goal always since the beginning of the year was to go to the NCAA tournament and become the first HBCU or the first, I'm not for sure HBCU, but I think the first HBCU to make it past the first round. That is our biggest goal as a whole.
We're talking to Shekyla Hill of Grambling State, senior point guard, who's recorded two quadruple doubles in her career, which is already now more quadruple doubles in her career than all of men's Division I players combined, because there's only been one guy that has ever been able to accomplish that feat. Shekyla, tell me a little bit about growing up. You know, you say you kind of tailor your game after Russell Westbrook because the way he plays with the energy, and he's kind of a he grinds it out. He brings so much intensity to the court. Who did you learn the game from? Was it your mom? Was it your dad? Was it an older brother or older sister? Who did you learn the game from growing up in Little Rock?
Actually, it's a family game. I have brothers, and I'm the only girl, well, from my mom's side. And so being the only girl, I feel like I always had to grind it out. I wasn't the tallest or the most athletic or the fastest. So I had to improve my skill, and I just had to make sure that I continued to work hard. And I've been playing the game for as long as I can remember, maybe like 3 or 4. And so it's always been in my life. And then with my brothers playing too, it's just always been something that I've just grown to love.
Moving forward, Chicago, with the rest of the season, obviously you guys got Southern on deck Saturday there at their place at 3 p.m. tip, and that's a rival. Tell us a little bit about I know the rivalry is so big for football with the Bayou Classic, but does that rivalry bleed over onto the hardwood?
Yes. Actually, they call it Bayou Classic on the hardwood, and I feel like that's probably one of our hardest games. Last year we ended up playing them in the championship. I think we split it last year. It was 1-1. They won one game. We won one. And we ended up winning in the championship. And so this year, they won the first time that we played. So we're going down there with the mindset that we cannot lose. That if by the end of the season, it'll be split 1-1.
And Shikala, we'll wrap it up with this. You know, obviously the goal is to get to the tournament, and I know your coach has already, you know, kind of publicly said that you guys believe that you can be the first HBCU to win a game in the tournament on the women's side, which has never happened. So, you know, to reach that goal and to have that achievement as a senior, what do your not only yourself but the rest of the team have to do moving forward the rest of the way to make sure that happens?
We have to continue gelling as a whole. Coach Murray always says, you want to gel at the right time. You don't want to gel too early or gel too late. We want to gel completely at the right time, and then we want to continue playing together as a team. I feel like me, as a leader, I should become a better leader. I need to become more vocal, and I need to lead my team by example and continue. I feel like I've been doing that, and I need to continue doing that. And if we continue playing as a team and we gel at the right time and have everything right, it should be possible for us to win the first round, even go past the first round.
Shikala, I appreciate you taking some time out for us. Congrats on the individual accomplishment of getting your second quadruple-double, the first player, either men or on the women's side, to be able to do that. And best of luck to you and the Tigers the rest of the way, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you so much.
Shikala Hill, when you get dap and recognized from the likes of Chris Paul and James Harden and LeBron James, and former women's players greats reach out to you, you know that you have a very unique skill set and that you have, as they used to say, game. And she has it, an abundance of game. She is a fun player to watch. If you get the opportunity to check out the Grambling State Tigers play, watch some YouTube videos of her performances or get to see them in live, you should. She's a special player, and she's going to do big things moving forward. Great interview with Shikala Hill of Grambling State. We'll keep it rolling after this on the Rap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers. Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsha III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111. We just got done talking to Shikala Hill, senior point guard from Grambling State, who becomes the first player, man or woman, to record not one but two quadruple doubles in NCAA history. A terrific interview with her. First hour, we talked to Josh Booty, who 25 years ago this week signed on the dotted line to play football and baseball for LSU, but his career at LSU was derailed a little bit due to his professional baseball career. But kind of a trip down memory lane with Josh Booty, former Evangel star and National Player of the Year, and that was terrific as well. We'll keep you updated on any happenings with National Signing Day. Travian Benjamin from St. Martinville, who had already verbally committed to go play at Southern University, the St. Martinville Senior High sensational running back who had 43 rushing touchdowns and well over 2,000 yards this past season. He's already committed, and Southern already has his paperwork in, but they're having a ceremony at the school today where other players are going to have a chance, including Markavian Williams, the dual-threat quarterback, and Marcus Cormier. Both of those will be signing their national letter of intent as well across the board. So we'll keep an eye out on what's going on throughout Acadiana, giving you updates. The morning is usually the slow portion, but if we do receive any updates, whether it concerns LSU, the Raging Cajuns, or our local Acadiana Stars, we will make sure to bring that to you live here on the air. But right now, I want to talk a little New Orleans Saints. Interesting story that came out last night was that New Orleans Saints first-round draft pick, then this year the rookie pass rusher, Marcus Davenport, out of UTSA. They had to trade up to be able to get him. They traded away their first-round pick this year, this upcoming draft, to get him. And he had a very good year, but then he got hampered by injuries. And it was reported via Nick Underhill through the New Orleans Advocate that the Saints rookie defensive end revealed on Tuesday that he had an apparent procedure that he had a procedure done and was playing through pain down the stretch of the season. Davenport wrote on Twitter, "Most people don't know, but I had been dealing with what was considered a season-ending injury. Luckily, I was able to play through the pain, and although I was not 100%, I finished the season. I promise to come back better. Thank you for all that supported me." In the photo that Davenport posted to his Twitter account, he's laying in a hospital bed with his right foot heavily wrapped, which suggests that he's dealing with the same injury that sidelined him during the season, or that's the foot that was injured and that he's recovering from now. He did suffer a toe injury, as Underhill reports, on his right foot during the October matchup with the Minnesota Vikings while sacking Kirk Cousins. He missed the next three games before returning against the Falcons, but he was never quite the same. He had four sacks at the time of his injury, but only had shared credit for another the rest of the way. So I'll ask you, Cody Schutz, I'll bring you in on this, brother, as being a member of the Who Dat Nation. How do you feel about that, knowing now that Davenport was playing through essentially a season-ending injury, but he was playing through it to try to help his team? Are you happy that he was putting the team first, or are you unhappy because here's a guy that the Saints invested so much in to get last year, giving away another first-round pick to get him? Like, hey, dude, maybe you should have shut it down to save you for the next seasons ahead. How do you fall on that?
I'm not mad at him. I think it's if you want to be out there, if you want to play, if you want to be on the field, that's fine. Go for it. But I don't, because he sat out a handful of games already in the season anyways, and yes, he got some, I guess you could say, sort of significant playing time towards the end of the season there. But overall, in the grand scheme of things, Davenport wasn't the hugest of factors into the Saints season overall. Now, if next season rolls around and Marcus Davenport is still banged up and he's still dealing with this foot injury and it's still nagging around and it starts to become one of those things, well, then, I'll turn around and I'll have a problem with it because, okay, now you're costing yourself multiple seasons when maybe you should have only cost yourself your rookie year. But as long as he comes back, you know, healthy and he's ready to go and he's back on the field, you know, in a reasonable amount of time for next season, then I don't see any harm or foul. And I'm not mad at the guy for trying hard.
I think as a rookie, you need to try to, your rookie right. season's all about making that impression and building that relationship with your teammates, right? And if you're a rookie, there's a little bit of pressure on you, especially if your team is trying to make a run to the Super Bowl as they were this past season. You know, you're going to go out there, you're going to try to fight with your other brothers out there, especially on that defense, which seems to be such a tight-knit group to begin with, Cody. So I'm not surprised that he battled through the injury. Plus, it's a transition year. For most pass rushers, it's usually that rookie season is a transition year. So the fact that he was nicked up a little bit, he got to learn how to be a pro. He got to learn what Dennis Allen wants out of that defense. And with Okafor likely opting out, and going to be hitting the free agency, be hitting the free agent market. Well, this is great. You know, Davenport showed some grit, showed some toughness with his teammates, showed them that he had their back and that he was putting his own health, so to speak, putting that on the back burner to try to help his teammates. That goes a long way. And now that he's had the procedure right after the end of the season, he'll be healthy, he'll be rare and to go for the start of next season where his role is going to expand, right? So, all in all, a surprise. He did seem, if you watched him play, he did seem like he had lost a step. You know, no pun intended, that he did seem to kind of lose a step there towards the tail end. He wasn't as effective as he was earlier in the season. Your first thought was maybe he hit that rookie wall. But knowing now that it was due to an injury, he's getting it taken care of. He's going to be healthy. And you look, the Saints traded up and traded away their 2019 first-round draft pick for this guy because they feel like he can anchor, he can be their pass rusher, their edge rusher to complement Cam Jordan for years to come. So, yeah, he got the learning experience that he received last year, necessary experience. And I like, you know, the other thing that I like I like that it wasn't made a big deal during the season. He didn't pull a Big Ben Roethlisberger. You know, he didn't make it all about him during the year. He didn't have a press conference with media and tell them about his injury that the training staff or the coaching staff wasn't aware of. So, kudos to Marcus Davenport for not being like Big Ben, who, by the way, I am not a fan of. If we've already established this once before on the show. I am not a fan of the Big Ben. But he's got Marcus Davenport, rookie season's in the books, learned a lot. He was effective. He did come on there a little bit, showed flashes of what could help make him one of the best pass rushers in the National Football League. And he was still banged up, but still a learning experience for him. Watch him take the next step next year. He should take a big leap next year. When we come back, we'll welcome on our friend Sheldon Mickles from the Baton Rouge Advocate. He's going to help us break down preview tonight's LSU men's basketball game at Mississippi State, a battle of two top 25 teams there in the SEC West, right here on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios. And just a reminder, you can listen to the LSU men's basketball game at Mississippi State tonight live right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game show will start at 7:30, tip at 8 o'clock. And we're going to head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline to talk about that game as we welcome on our good friend. He covers LSU football as well as LSU men's basketball for the Baton Rouge Advocate. It's the one and only Sheldon Mickles. Sheldon, how are you this morning, brother?
Very good. How you doing, RP3?
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing great. Look, I want to touch on a ton of different topics with you, as always. But let's start off with Saturday's loss inside the PMAC. I know it was packed. It was the loudest it has been in years. The fan support was immense. And the team itself had a great finish to the game, a great rally to get back into the game, but a disappointing game for a team that they should have beaten and a team that they knew was going to come in and give everything that they had because they just needed overtime a few weeks earlier to beat them on the road. Tell me your impressions from that game, what occurred. Was it simply them just kind of sleepwalking and getting caught, unlike what happened at Missouri, or was it just Arkansas was playing at a high level? What was it that ended up kind of dooming LSU on Saturday inside the PMAC, inside that great crowd?
Well, I think it was a combination of things, and like you just pointed out, they just seemed to have lapses in the second half for some reason. They didn't have it at Texas A&M. They didn't have it at Ole Miss. They played quite well in the second half of those two games, but you know, they gave up the big lead at Houston. They gave up the big lead at Arkansas in the second half. They gave up the big lead against Arkansas here. I mean, I'm sorry, Arkansas got the lead here in the second half. So they have lapses where they're still trying to figure it out, like the causes of it. I mean, they keep looking for answers. And as a good coach as Will Wade is, they have trouble finding, you know, the causes of some of these things. But you got to give Arkansas a little credit, or a lot of credit, excuse me. I mean, you come in, they were shooting better than 60% from the field. At one point, it was 65-7 or something like that. They wound up shooting 56-point-something for the game and 50 over 50 from three. So you do that in the SEC road game, I mean, you're doing pretty well. It's going to be hard to beat. LSU didn't help themselves with 21 turnovers. I know, excuse me, seven of them were offensive charges. So that's kind of things they can try to fix, things that are going to happen in a game. So I think he excused a few of those because they're errors of omission. They're trying to make something happen. Let's put it that way. It's not stupid turnovers. So 21 turnovers didn't help. And then they didn't shoot the ball quite as well. I think they went down a little bit under 50, which is normal for them. They shoot about 47% for the season. So it was a combination of all those things. But Arkansas, you know, just they are a good three-point shooting team, and they took it away from them up in Fayetteville And then last Saturday, he, you know, Will Wade took the blame for it, and he wanted to give more attention to Daniel Gafford down low, and that left the three-point guys kind of open. So, you know, what he did at Fayetteville, he switched it around, and it kind of backfired on him.
We're on with Sheldon Mickles of the Baton Rouge Advocate. You know, this we talked about this, Sheldon, before you and I, and Will Wade's talked about, you know, this is still a team figuring out things and still, you know, very much in transition. There's still plenty to work on dealing with being a highly touted team and, you know, dealing with making sure to be up for every game, right? And Wade has made that a point in nearly every news conference that I've seen is, you know, not taking any team for granted and anything like that. Can a loss against a team like Arkansas kind of help refocus this team? I guess my question to you is that do you think Wade is hopeful that a disappointing loss to Arkansas on Saturday will help refocus them for this stretch at Mississippi State tonight, then at home against Auburn on Saturday, and then at Kentucky and Lexington next week, that kind of murderer's row? Do you think that a loss can help refocus them?
Yeah, I think I've seen, you know, this team. I can't give you a specific example from last year, but my memory is not that good anymore. This year, obviously, the Houston game, they kind of snapped out of it. The next game played very well against St. Mary's, although they did give up a second-half lead again, a big second-half lead. But they managed to win that one. They usually, when they have a loss, they seem like they kind of snap back. I don't know if he just cracks the whip a little more or tightens the screws a little more in practice, but they seem to respond, let's put it that way. And the players talked about that after the game Saturday. Skylar Mays, who was a wonderful, wonderful speaker. He kind of tells you like it is, but he said they didn't play hard. And, you know, Monday we asked Will Wade about not playing hard. And it contributes to that. And, you know, he kind of said, well, you know, they get the little lapses. But to a man, they said they need to play harder for 40 minutes, obviously. And how they go about doing that, sure, like I said, they emphasize it in practice. And he said the practice was pretty good Monday. So, hopefully they got it out of their system now. Because they got this big stretch coming up. I mean, it is three of the next four on the road. Then they're going to have Tennessee coming in right after that, A&M coming in, Florida coming in, and a three-game home stretch. So they have to, you know, at least, in my mind, split these four. And maybe winning three would be great. You know, splitting would be, I think, pretty good. So, you know, when you play at Mississippi State, a team that doesn't lose a lot at home, they got really good length. You got a 6'10", 6'11 guy, just like LSU does. And then they got a 6'10", 6'9 guy coming off the bench. They got really, really good guard play in Lamar Peters and with Derrick Weatherspoon. So this is a pretty formidable team, and I kind of scratch my head and wonder how they afford four in the conference because they probably should be, 6-2 or at worst, So you got this big game tonight, and you got Auburn, who's getting kind of hot again. Was like 1-4 in the conference, so 2-4, and now they're back to 4-4. So you got them, and you got to go to Kentucky on Tuesday night. So they have to figure things out, and then after that, it's at Georgia. But they have to figure these things out and make sure they don't let too many of these get away.
Sheldon, tell me about the job Ben Howland's done at Mississippi State. It's taken a while. We knew it would because of the state of the program. And this is one of the best head coaches in the country, and he's done a terrific job there in Starkville. Last year, they had well over 20 wins on their way to the NIT semifinals. Tell me from your perspective as someone who's covered this league for as long as you have, how difficult is it to turn things around at a place like Mississippi State, and how impressed have you been with Ben Howland's job there as the head coach of the Bulldogs?
Well, I have to admit that when he got the job, I think Rick Barnes got the job at Tennessee at the same time, I kind of scoffed at it and going like, what are they doing? Why don't they go get you know, a good young coach. And basically, both of those programs had done that already. So I think they were tired of doing that. So I'm gonna swallow my pride here and admit that I thought they were both making a mistake. So you see where how much wisdom and stuff I have. But anyway, Ben Howland, I think he's got four or five Final Fours, and I was going like, man, this guy's like 58, 60 years old, and he's coming to Starkville, Mississippi, of all places. What is he doing? What are they doing hiring the guy? But I mean, he went out and he recruited Lamar Peters and Gary Weatherspoon. I don't know if the previous coach had gotten those guys, but he got those guys. And like I said, he's got tremendous guard play. He's got bigs. He's got the guard. So he's got a really nice group there. They're all back from last year. I think one guy, they lost one guy last year, and kind of Will Wade said today that, I mean, yesterday that the guy they lost was, they replaced him with a guy named Reggie Perry, who's the freshman of the week in the SEC. So it turned out pretty good for him. But, I mean, they have, like I said, I'm still trying to figure out how to four and four in the league. But they have everything. They have 3-point shooters. I think five of their three players shoot better than 35% of three. So, you know, they got the outside game, they got the inside game, so it's a very formidable team, especially on the road tonight.
We're on with Sheldon Mickles of the Baton Rouge Advocate. Sheldon, you know, dive in a little bit more. You know, you mentioned the Perry kid; he's a freshman of the week, and they're doing great things. And Mississippi State apparently has. They have such diversity with their lineup. They have the great wing players. They have the good guard play, and they got the bigs as well. What do you think is going to be a key matchup tonight for LSU if they can go in there and pull out the victory? Is there a key matchup, maybe down low in the paint, or what do you think it's going to be tonight?
Well, I think it could be down low, but it could be, you know, the perimeter because Callum Mays is probably going to be on Quindary Weatherspoon. A couple of 6-4 guards, and Tremont Waters is going to be hooked up with Lamar Peters. And one thing Will Wade said the other night is that Lamar Peters almost single-handedly beat him in the SEC tournament last year. That was another game where LSU was down, you know, with about 3 minutes to go and came back. I don't remember if they tied it. They lost by three. But Lamar Peters, who's a New Orleans guy, scored 24 points and 6 assists against him. So they're very wary of him. I'm pretty sure, you know, I'm not pretty sure that both point guards, but Tremont and Lamar Peters are going to go at it, and then probably Nick Weatherspoon and Skylar Mays, unless, you know, Will decides to put Marlon Taylor on Nick Weatherspoon. He did the mix up the brothers. But Gary Weatherspoon, so he's their leading scorer. And Will Wade has told us that, you know, he doesn't mind putting Marlon Taylor on a 2 guy if he has to, or 3 or 4. So he could either get Mays on him or Marlon Taylor, and probably we'll see, you know, a little mixture, a combination of both maybe at some point. But he can also use Javonte Smart on him. So they have some guys. LSU's got some guys that can match up, you know, against their cards. You just kind of wonder how LSU's going to do against Reggie Perry and the other guy whose name escapes me right now, the big kid in the middle. I do love them. And then they have Eric Holman, who's another 6'10 guy. So LSU's big guys have to match up well, obviously, and LSU's guards have to kind of control Mississippi State's guards. So it's you don't know if you're going to get an inside game or an outside game tonight, but it's going to be pretty interesting.
Sheldon, you've been doing this for quite a long time. I know you remember the days where National Signing Day was barely covered, right? It was not given the front page treatment that it is today. From your perspective as a veteran journalist, just tell me how massive has the evolution been for National Signing Day over the past 20 years?
Well, uh, not trying to tell my age or anything, but I've been working at the paper for 40 and a half years, and when I started out with the State Times, the old State Times that people may remember, I remember back in like 1979 or 80, you know, we paid no attention to it. I mean, you didn't have all these, you know, recruiting services, and, you know, we got the release from LSU about a week later, you know, with the bios of the guys they signed and stuff like that. In fact, I was telling some of our younger writers that I work with that, you know, back in 79 and 80, and people don't remember this, and I don't remember when they stopped it, but they used to have an early signing date in December, like first week of December, much like they do now. But it was non-binding. You could sign with an SEC team, but then you couldn't sign with any other SEC team when it came to February, so you had to re-sign. But, you know, we would get the, you know, names about a week later, and we'd run bios on the players and everything. And so it's just not what it is now, obviously, with the, you know, Internet and all these, you know, the websites, which are outstanding, I might add, 247 Sports and Rivals and Scout. They all do a great job. They have dedicated guys that are doing that year-round. And they do a great job in football and basketball. And it's kind of interesting. You still don't know what you're going to get until you get them on the campus and get them in uniforms. But it's, it makes so much more interest for the fans. I mean, fans and media. For instance, a lot of the players that they got in December, I didn't know a lot about because I don't really deal with recruiting a lot. That's Ali Ryder and Brooks Cabina. But, you know, it's kind of interesting to see these guys, the five stars, the four stars, who's coming in, who Alabama's getting, who's, you know, who's coming in and getting some of these kids. But, you know, it's interesting. It'll be very interesting today to see the two kids from a meet where they wind up. LSU gets one of the two, it'd be great. If they get two of the two, it'd be even greater. So it'd be awesome if they could get both of those kids.
Sheldon, we'll wrap it up with this. The class for the Pro Football Hall of Fame was finalized over the weekend on Saturday night, on the eve of the Super Bowl, and not one but two LSU Tigers got a knock on their door there in the hotel room, which is just a weird thing for me, but we don't have time to get into that, why you have them all at the hotel and you have to wait for a knock on the door. But it's just like, I was like, why are you trying to make it like Three's Company? I don't understand what's going on. But so – Kevin Mawai was, I guess, a little bit of surprise, but well deserving. A great center and offensive lineman. He played every position on the offensive line for LSU. He gets in, and I know a guy that's kind of near and dear to you is Johnny Robinson. Gets in as well from the senior committee. Both guys are in the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, as we know. But how significant was that to have not one but two guys from LSU going to be enshrined into Canton this summer?
Yeah, and, you know, LSU had three going into Saturday. Now they're going to have five. So they almost doubled that in one day. But anyway, Kevin Mawai was quite a surprise to me. I kept telling people, you know, hey, I think Alan Faneca is going to get in one day, but I didn't think he would get in this year because they had so many good, you know, newcomers coming in, Tony Gonzalez and Ed Reed. We knew they were going to get in, so we didn't know how many spots. But I thought Alan Faneca would get in before Kevin Mawai, but I mean, it's just so hard, you know, guards and centers to get in, unless you're like a Larry Allen from Dallas, who everybody used to rave about every time they play on, you know, Monday Night Football. And same thing, but you never heard when teams would play on night games like Alan Faneca, you never heard people raving about him or Kevin Mawai. You never heard people raving about him. But they made Pro Bowls and made, all pro teams. So I think Alan Faneca is going to get in next two or three years. They're going to keep an eye on him. But Johnny Robinson really should have been in 10, 15 years ago at least. And it's kind of nice to see him go in. He looked good the other night when they showed him on TV. So hopefully his health is still good and he'll be able to enjoy it. But he should have been in at least 10, 15 years ago.
I agree with that, Sheldon, totally.
Well, Sheldon, I appreciate making some time for us as always, brother. Enjoy the games this week for the Tigers, and we'll be in touch with you soon, my friend.
Anytime.
Sheldon Mickles, Baton Rouge Advocate. We will wrap up this National Signing Day edition of Rap Game with RP3 after this break right here on 103.7 The Game. Jarrett Rozier, our friend of the program here on the Rap Game with RP3, says LSU's six remaining spots are now down to three. Signed is Sonia Fonia, the from defensive end from Mesa Community College, which was the other day. DB Maurice Hampton out of Memphis. That's the kid that could be drafted in the Major League Baseball draft in the summer. He's committed. And a surprise, tight end offensive tackle Ray Parker, who didn't sign in December and some thought wouldn't sign this morning, ended up signing out of Ruston today.
That who are you going to call?
Oh, Ray Parker. Perfect. Bulk of the attention for those final spots will be resting in a meet this afternoon when Devontae Lee and Ish Sofser will announce at 12:45. You will get updates on that throughout the day here. Make sure to tune in from 4 to 6 today for Bumper to Bumper Sports with our brother Ben Love. He will have Raging Cajuns head coach Billy Napier on live talking about National Signing Day. Y'all have a great day. Keep it live and local right here on 103.7 The Game.